Something is wrong in Buffalo.
He's a Buffalo Bill, and you know, we're going to work it out.
Breaking news as the Houston Texans traded for Bills wideout Stephon Diggs.
This was something that had been brewing for recent months and really the last couple of seasons.
Josh Allen has to be looking around like this cupboard is getting pretty bare.
It certainly doesn't make sense. This is a guy that's had 4,000-yard receivings in a row.
You weigh the pros and the cons of every decision like this, and we don't take it lightly, but you're always making it in the best interest of the Bills.
That's the big news of the week. Stephon Diggs, now a Houston Texan. The Bills traded him to Houston on Wednesday. We're going to get into the details on both sides of the deal in just a minute. But welcome into NFL Live on this Friday. I am Dan Graziano, joined today by Jeremy Fowler, Mina Kimes, and Bill Barnwell to break it all down for you on, as I said, a Friday afternoon. And I want to start with that Stephon Diggs trade. Jeremy, the Texans made an interesting contract adjustment after they got Diggs in the building. What more can you tell us?
Yeah, so Dan, they basically took his 3 years of mostly non-guaranteed money on his contract. They ripped it all up. They put it all into this year, as you can see there. That included $3.5 million in guarantees he was due next year. I checked in on this with a source. They said the Texans basically decided to do him a solid. They know that he wanted this with the freedom to get into free agency as 2025. And we talked about it off air. This helps them with their cap space. They can certainly knock things down, put some void years on the contract, gives Houston some flexibility to that. And it's really a Keenan Allen situation with Chicago. Now you have a player who's in his 30s, still maybe has a little bit of prime years left, but it doesn't have a lot of time. And so you give it a year, see how it goes. You can always franchise tag him or you can extend him onto a new contract, but they did him a solid here.
And the Texans have the ability to bring on a big contract because they have the quarterback on the rookie deal, and obviously a big advantage cap-wise for them. Mina, how do you see Diggs fitting into that Houston offense?
Extremely well. And he's going to have to, by the way, to make this deal worth it for them after the adjustment they made to his contract. But yeah, from just strictly a football perspective, he's a phenomenal fit. So complimentary to the receivers who are already on the roster. Nico Collins is your true number one, your big-bodied ex-receiver who can win downfield. Tank Dell, coming back from injury, is your talented speedster, deep threat, inside-outside versatility. And in Diggs, you have now the route runner extraordinaire who can win underneath and at the intermediate level. So I love what it does for the passing attack. I also love what it does for a run game that was, frankly, terrible last year. The Texans offense was 10th in EPA per play throwing the ball, 30th running. Now, there's a number of reasons for that. Injuries on the offensive line certainly factor into it from a run blocking perspective. But they faced the 6th highest rate of stacked boxes in the NFL last season. They did run also a lot on early downs. But you're not going to face that level of stack boxes regardless of your run-pass balance with these three receivers on the field. I can tell you that. I would be very surprised. And if they do, C.J. Stroud will throw it all over the yard. So really, really love what this offense this does for the offense in the short term. And it is just the short term now we've learned because of the contract adjustment.
Extremely short. Only a one-year deal. And Jeremy framed it as doing them a solid. It's certainly doing Stephon Diggs quite a solid, maybe an unprecedented solid when you look at NFL contracts. This is really not something teams do with 4 years left to go on an extension, which Stephon Diggs had before the Texans went ahead and did this. They moved up $3 million from the future into this year. They gave him $20 million of what he was owed this year as a signing bonus up front. And this is a really unique and very curious situation, because if you're the Texans, the only reason you would do this would be if you felt like you had to keep Stephon Diggs motivated for 2024. But if you have to keep Stephon Diggs motivated in this way for 2024, is it really worth sending a second-round pick to get him when you might only have him for 1 year with no ability to get a comp pick in return? Just a unique set of circumstances for the Houston Texans.
Yeah, Texans obviously all in for this year as they build around C.J. Stroud. But the Bills, I want to flip it around to them. Diggs is not the first departure from Buffalo this offseason. They lost Gabe Davis in free agency as well, some guys on the defensive side of the ball. So, Bill, when you look at Buffalo, four-time defending division champion who expects to win every year, where do they go from here with the draft coming up in a little less than 3 weeks?
They have to evolve their roster construction now that Josh Allen is significantly more expensive than he was earlier in his career. Remember, when they traded for Stephon Diggs, Josh Allen was still on his rookie deal. And oh, by the way, the Texans just acquired C.J. Stroud. Perhaps C.J. Stroud has Stephon Diggs on a rookie deal as well. So from the Bills' perspective, they need to add help at receiver. They could trade up for somebody, but I think it makes more sense to trade down. This is one of the deepest drafts for any receiving core we've seen in several years now. Josh Allen, of course, is going to be a guy who spreads the ball around. We saw that in the offense in the second half of the season. They could run the ball more. We talked yesterday about them using 12 personnel more often with Dalton Kincaid and Dawson Knox. Mm-hmm. They have a really wide range of things they can do. But I look at the Packers, a team that has no first-round picks at receiver. They traded away Devontae Adams. They have 3 second-round picks at receiver, a third-rounder, a fourth-rounder, a fifth-rounder. They've managed to piece together an excellent receiving core without having that number one guy, that traditional receiver. The Chiefs have Travis Kelce, but they really did not go out and get a Tyreek Hill replacement, and they've done just fine. Yeah. So could be a sort of a bit of a zigging when everybody's zagging, right? Go out and trade your number one receiver and maybe replace him with quantity over quality.
Yeah, I think it depends for Buffalo on how they regard this class, how they regard the players who are potentially available then to them at 28 versus the receivers at the top and the bottom. And I say that because I don't think there's an obvious, one-size-fits-all approach to this, regardless of the players in terms of like trading down, even though, as Bill, I think, correctly put, this is a very deep class. And there are examples in recent years of teams like the Packers, notably, who have found really good wide receivers later in the draft. The thing for me, though, with this particular class is I view it as having a very clear top three. You see them right there, Harrison Jr., Neighbors, and Odunze. I think those three players are worth trading up for. If I'm Buffalo, I pick up the phone, I call maybe Chicago, maybe even Tennessee. I pick 7, although they're probably going to take an offensive lineman. And I say, what would it take to get Rome Odunze? Now, based on recent precedent, and actually a pretty similar trade would be the Bills trading down with Kansas City for the Patrick Mahomes trade, where they went from 27 to 10. They would probably have to give up a first-round pick. I just think Odunze is worth that. I think his floor is so high. He comes in and immediately gives you the sort of production you need to continue contending. But if you can't get Odunze, I would not trade up. So to be clear, this is very player dependent for me. And if you can't, I would see if A.D. Mitchell is still there at 28, I would consider sticking. Otherwise, I would, to take Bill's point, think about trading down.
Interesting. They're in the back end of the round, so they'd have to be worried about somebody coming up to jump them for a receiver maybe, because Everybody knows what they have to do, right? Yeah. Is that you expect receiver for them early in the draft?
I do, and I see Dalton Kincaid looming larger, the tight end. They got 25th overall last year. They love him as a player and a guy in the locker room. They really want to build a bigger piece of the offense around him. Now they want to pair somebody young and motivated like him with him in that receiving room. So I expect them to possibly just sit tight in the 20s knowing they can get the best player. I've talked to a lot of teams even in picking early second round to believe they can get a star receiver at that point. So they can certainly be patient, maybe even move back and get what they need.
A lot of thought that this class of receivers in the draft is extremely deep, so we'll see how that works out for Buffalo. They got 10 picks starting with that 28th pick. Do you know when's the last time? It was 10 years ago they used a first-round pick on a wide receiver. Do you know who it was?
Ooh, Mike Williams?
No, it was Sammy Watkins. We'll do more trivia as we go along, but we're just getting started here on NFL Live. Michael Penix Jr. visiting the Falcons today, but should the Dirty Birds be looking to build around Kirk Cousins, or should they be planning for the future? Bill's going to tell us what he thinks about that. Plus, who will be the second quarterback off the board, Jaden Daniels or Drake May? Mina tells us how each one of these top passers can reach his full potential. Don't go anywhere. We're coming right back on NFL Live.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be. What if in 2024 you got a little bit better every day? When you're learning a new language with Babbel, that's exactly what you're doing. And if Babbel can help you start speaking a new language in just 3 weeks, imagine what you could do in a full year. Don't pay hundreds of dollars for private tutors or waste hours on apps that don't really help you speak the language. Try Babbel, the science-backed language learning app that actually works. Babbel's quick 10-minute lessons are designed by over 200 language experts to help you start speaking a new language in as little as 3 weeks. It's designed by real people for real conversations. Babbel's tips and tools are approachable, accessible, rooted in real-life situations, and delivered with conversation-based teaching, so you're ready to practice what you've learned in the real world. They have over 16 million subscriptions sold. Plus, all of Babbel's 14 award-winning language courses are backed by their 20-day money-back guarantee. Here's a special limited-time deal for our listeners. Right now, get 60% off your Babbel subscription, but only for our listeners at babbel.com/tackle. Get 60% off at babbel.com/tackle. Spelled BABBEL.com/tackle. Rules and restrictions may apply.
I don't feel like I compare to anybody. I have my own style of game. But I really don't compare myself to anybody.
Guys, he's the ultimate winner. He's a difference maker.
I say I'm cool, calm, and collect. I don't really get too high or too low in any pressure moments.
You can make the case that no one threw the ball better on tape this year than Michael Penix.
You know, I want to write my own story, write my own narrative, and I feel like I did that. I'm super blessed.
So much talk about the top three quarterbacks in this year's draft. Even J.J. McCarthy sitting there maybe at number four. But Michael Penix Jr. was a red-hot name just a couple of months ago during the college football playoffs. What are you hearing, Jeremy, about the NFL's interest in him?
Dan, he's still pretty hot. I have checked with multiple teams who predict that Penix will not be there where they pick in the early to second round. Now, you never know with the draft, but he certainly got first-round potential at this point. He's met with a lot of teams that need a quarterback. Already met with the Raiders, Broncos, private workout with the Vikings. I've confirmed that he is right now working out for the Falcons. Raheem Morris, GM Terry Fontenot went over there. They just got a quarterback. They don't need one, but they're looking at the future a little bit, maybe 2-3 years down the road. So he's got value as one of the best pure passers in the draft. Dan, the last University of Washington quarterback to go in the second round.
In the second
2001.
Round?
2001. Do you know who it is?
I don't. Who was it?
Marcus Tuiasosopo. I knew I was going to butcher the name.
Oh, Marcus Tuiasosopo.
Tuiasosopo.
It's a trivia-heavy NFL Live today, and I did not know that one, but maybe I'll get the next one. Bill, Jeremy points out the Atlanta Falcons did just sign a quarterback in free agency for a great deal of money. So should they be messing around with Michael Penix, or should they be just all in around Kirk Cousins?
I understand the urge to pursue a quarterback of the future, have someone behind Kirk Cousins. We did just see him tear his Achilles last year. The Vikings wished they had a better backup behind Kirk Cousins. But I think this Falcons team has a lot to play for this year. They're closer than people may give them credit for. The defense was not great the last couple weeks of the year. But up to that point, through week 16, the Falcons were allowing the fifth fewest points per possession of any defense in football. They were right there with the Jets among the best defenses in football. And so from Atlanta's perspective, they have some work to do on the defensive side of the ball. Their top two pass rushers from last year are free agents. Maybe need some help at cornerback. To me, I would be going in trying to supplement that defense that took major strides forward last year, maybe add a piece or two on offense. I know there's the urge to add that quarterback, but the Falcons, who haven't won a playoff game since 2017, by the way, they could win a playoff game if they get their defensive additions right in the draft this year.
I guess it never hurts to look. Mina, where would you have Penix? What do you think is the best fit for him, if not Atlanta?
I really like the idea of Michael Penix Jr. on the Las Vegas Raiders for a few reasons. One, for him, doesn't make sense to me to draft him and then sit him for a couple of years, not just because he is an older prospect, but I think he is the kind of player who has obviously played a lot of football and come in and compete immediately, and that's what the Las Vegas Raiders with their current quarterback group, Aiden O'Connell and Gardner Minshew, need, is someone who can come in and compete for that starting job. I think it's a good personnel fit as well. Raiders offensive line isn't the strength of the team, but Michael Penix Jr. actually had the lowest pressure to sack rate of any of the top prospects in football. Not the most mobile, but a lot of that was because he has a quick release. He can make throws from unconventional arm angles. And then when you look at this Raiders receiver group, Davante Adams, Jacoby Myers, they're kind of eerily similar to the players he was working with at Washington, with Adams being your Rome Odunze and Myers being your Jalen Polk underneath. It's just easy for me to imagine him throwing beautiful back shoulder fades to Davante Adams because we have proof of concept from his UW days. So I would really like, I don't know about at pick 13, but I would really like him at that particular destination.
Yeah, fun to watch him throw, but the concern is obviously the injury history. Season-ending injuries 4 years in a row from 2018 to 2021. He is healthy now, however, and led all FBS in passing yards this past year. New on NFL Live earlier today, the Carolina Panthers announcing a 4-year contract extension for defensive tackle Derrick Brown. Our Adam Schefter reporting the deal is worth $96 million over 4 years, a little more than $63 million guaranteed. And Adam also posting on X about the recent trend in big contracts for defensive tackles. You see the list here, defensive tackles getting paid. The two big ones up there, Chris Jones, Christian Wilkins, Justin Matabike. Obviously a trend here where teams are prioritizing the interior defensive line players. It used to be that the big money obviously went to the edge guys, but this does seem to be a little bit of a trend. Mina, what do you think about this?
Yeah, when you see Robert Hunt, the guard, getting $100 million from Carolina and you're wondering why, it's because of those guys right there. You can put up that list. I will say, there's definitely a trend, and we'll get to that. I do, however, think some of this is just a confluence of really talented football players being eligible for contracts, because every single one of those players you put up is awesome and deserving of the contracts. There's no contract on that board where I'm like, I don't know, he's getting a positional bump. They are all excellent. I think Brown's contract points to one of the reasons why this is happening. So he is extremely good at stopping the run, actually first amongst defensive tackles in ESPN's run stop win rate. And a trend we have seen in the NFL in recent years is defenses trying to stop the run with lighter boxes, allocating fewer players in that front seven to stop it. And I think if you have a player like Brown who can play a gap and a half and really control the line of scrimmage, that helps a lot, and it's clearly something that Carolina values in this case.
Yeah, we've seen great defenses play from the inside out with their pass rush. Think the Rams with Aaron Donald, or the Chiefs with the highest paid player on that list, Chris Jones. This has been a trend that's been coming now over the last decade. Go back to 2014, top 10 edge rushers. They made about 44% more on average than the top 10 defensive tackles in football. Now, after this Derrick Brown signing, that number has dropped to 6%. So we're seeing teams being very comfortable saying, we're going to start from the inside out, build a pass rush that way. Really comes down to what player you have and what kind of core player you want to start your defense with.
Good time in history to be one of the big guys on the interior of the offensive or defensive line. We've got a lot more to discuss here on NFL Live today. We come back, the Bears added plenty of talent on offense, but what are the realistic expectations if they choose Caleb Williams with the number one overall pick? We're going to tell you when we come back.
Hi, it's Mike Greenberg letting you know ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sportsbook of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me, plus many more. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today. New users get a bet reset up to $1,000 in bonus bets if your first bet doesn't win. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
We all know breakfast is an important part of your day. But sometimes when you're traveling for business, you end up staying at a hotel that doesn't offer any. You know what happens? You grab a cup of coffee and skip the meal entirely. We've all been there. But if you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you can enjoy their free Bright Side breakfast featuring delicious baked goods, fruit, eggs, yogurt, and waffles. And really, who doesn't want to start their day with a fresh hot waffle? Tonight, La Quinta, tomorrow you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
This year's NFL draft is in Detroit, April 25th, 26th, and 27th. And we'll have every pick once again on ESPN, along with our usual expert analysis. It's also available on the NFL Network. And as always, ABC's coverage focuses on the prospect's journey to the draft. That's just under 3 weeks from now, the NFL draft, with the Chicago Bears on the clock with the first overall pick. And Bill Barnwell put out a great column yesterday on ESPN.com on the challenges of picking quarterbacks in the first round. So, Bill, since we have you here to explain the rationale behind this column, tell us what are the different potential outcomes, the range of potential outcomes for the Bears if they pick a quarterback first overall.
Yeah, Dan, so I went back and looked at the first overall picks going back to 1980 just to get a sense of what their traditional returns are. How often did they turn into superstars? How often were they something less than superstars at the first overall pick? You ended up with this sort of unique range of outcomes. On the very high end, you got Peyton Manning, a Hall of Famer. Below him, Joe Burrow, still some projection, obviously. He's early in his career, but a guy who the Bears might hope for at a high level. Jared Goff is the average quarterback. Never the best quarterback in football, but took a team to a Super Bowl, had several good seasons, helped rebuild the Lions. That's about what you would expect for the average return from a first overall pick. And then David Carr, Jamarcus Russell, the players by representative on the lower end. But that Goff example and those Burrow examples are interesting, because obviously you're hoping Caleb Williams is a Hall of Famer, but if you can get a Goff who might be the best quarterback in Bears history, given how he's played in Detroit and Los Angeles, or someone like Burrow, who took his team to the Super Bowl in 2 years, feels like those are maybe the best possible realistic outcomes for the Bears coming out of this draft.
Yeah, I think if you told Bears fans that he was going to be Goff, they might be a little concerned. Again, maybe not justifiably so, but if you told them it was going to be Burrow, then they'd be fired up. So let's focus on that Burrow range. Let's say they're trying to get somebody who lands in that 80th percentile or better, and we want to go through the top quarterbacks in this draft and look at each one and their chances. So, Mina, let's start with Caleb Williams, who we believe will be the first pick to the Bears, unless something weird happens here in the next couple of weeks. What has to happen for him to reach that 80th percentile Joe Burrow level?
Yeah, the one thing that comes to mind for me with Caleb, especially entering a situation in Chicago that I really like now, is he's just got to cut down on that time to throw. 3.14 seconds his final year in college, which was the fourth highest amongst college passers, the highest of the top prospects. There's only one NFL quarterback who had a higher time to throw, and that was Justin Fields last year. Now, for Caleb, there's a lot of explanations behind that, some of which you're seeing there. Guys aren't open. Sometimes it was lapses in pass protection, but he's going to have to cut that to succeed at the next level, and I think that'll be the single biggest determinant as to whether he does.
I feel like I'm thinking about Joe Burrow because I'm thinking of what worked out so well for him in Cincinnati, which is that they incorporated a lot of the stuff that worked for him at the college level. They worked out of empty, something he did so well at LSU. You saw that in the game plan early on in Cincinnati. I feel like for Caleb Williams, same thing. Go back to the stuff that worked for him in college, whether it be the RPOs, whether it be some of the air raid stuff that Lincoln Riley runs. Bring in some stuff from that playbook that he feels comfortable with and confident went from day one. It's not going to be the entirety of the offense, but if you can start with some of that stuff, give him some comfortable completions early in his career, just going to make his life easier as he transitions from the college game to the pro game.
All right, how about Jaden Daniels from LSU? A lot of mock drafts have him projected as the number two pick to Washington. We don't know where he will land, but regardless of where he lands, Bill, what's the biggest key for Jaden Daniels hitting that 80th percentile mark?
Really want to see them again play to his strengths if he goes to Washington. I want to see the RPO game. I want to see some maybe quick one-read plays, but then I want to see them get him out to create out of structure. He can create in structure. He's not just a trick play guy like maybe a Zach Wilson would have been, obviously. It didn't work out in New York, but he can create out of structure so effectively that I think I want to get him there more often than you would with other kinds of quarterbacks. So give him the RPO game, give him a half field read, give him stuff where if it's not there, trust his ability to run with the football, trust his ability to create out of structure, put him in the places where he succeeds best.
Hey, he's got to learn how to protect himself from the hits he might take in the NFL. He's such a dynamic runner, obviously incredibly productive on the ground in college. He's outrageous straight line speed and he's super elusive. But as you saw there, as when he tried to attempt that hurdle, oh God, there's so many plays like this, the ones you're seeing where you're watching, you're like, no, oh God. Then he takes this like massive hit. He is slim. His frame is not large. He's also kind of an upright runner. And that doesn't necessarily mean he's going to get injured in the NFL, but to limit that risk and to have the sort of success we're talking about, that 80 percentile success, he has got to get good at sliding, going out of bounds, and not exposing himself to some of the monster hits you saw there.
No doubt about that. Bill, let's do Drake May next. What's the biggest key for him to have success at the NFL level?
building in protections to help him against the blitz, something he struggled with during his time at Carolina. Over the last couple of years in college, 10th best QBR in football when he's not blitzed, when the team sent four players or less. But when they send extra pressure, he drops to 60th in the NFL in QBR. And I mean, every rookie quarterback pretty much needs help against the blitz, but I want to say that as a focus of the offense. Build in those 6-7 man protections. Let him do that hard play action. Let him get the opportunity to throw the ball to maybe two receivers downfield as opposed to getting 4 or 5 guys out into the route. Build in extra tight ends to give longer pass on those blitzes. Do what you can to help him out, because he's going to help big teams pay if you can hold up for him in protection.
That's a great one. So there's a concept that I invented, I think, when I was watching Josh Allen early in his career, called the YOLO dial, which is to say Josh Allen had that YOLO dial cranked all the way up, and then he learned to crank it down. And that's what Drake May has to do to succeed in the NFL, because when you watch his college tape, he's got an incredible arm. He can make all of the throws outside of structure, off platform. But sometimes he has a little bit too much faith in that arm and will throw across his body, into traffic, into shrinking windows, because he believes he can. Now, I don't want to erase it completely, that playmaking is part of what makes him special, but he gets comped to Justin Herbert sometimes because of his size, athleticism, and arm. He needs Herbert's brain a little bit in the NFL to have that kind of success.
Bill, there is a big Drake May versus Jaden Daniels debate going on right now, mainly in our nation's capital. What would you tell the people is the difference between those two guys? How do you size them up relative to each other?
I look at what Jaden Daniels did last year in terms of his significant improvement, and to me, that's a green flag. You look at guys who have made that kind of leap in the past, whether it be at the college level or the pro level recently, it's been a good sign. Go back to Joe Burrow, who was a day 3 pick heading into his final year at LSU. He makes a massive improvement. He's the first overall pick. He's been a superstar. Guys like Josh Allen and Jalen Hurts have made generational improvements, almost unprecedented improvements in terms of their accuracy at the pro level, their ability to mold, go from being an athlete to being a successful NFL quarterback. Guys didn't typically make those kind of improvements in the past. So we've seen players, whether it be their work ethic, whether it be their intelligence, their access to tape, the game slowing down, all those things come into play. But Jaden Daniels making that kind of leap, so significant from year to year, makes me think there's more improvement coming from him at the NFL level in the years to come.
You know, I think for me, it, in some ways, it's actually a really tough comparison because the situations they played in were so different. And this is always a challenge with evaluating college prospects, obviously, because you just, you know, different levels of play, different circumstances, different types of play calling. But it really, like with Daniels and May in particular, it is night and day, with Daniels coming from a fabulous situation at LSU. We talk a lot about the receivers, but I can't talk enough about how good this offensive line was. I think the tackles are both going to be top draft picks at some point, as well as, you know, he had consistency in play calling year to year. Whereas at UNC, Drake May last year, not great skill players around him, really struggles in pass protection, changing offensive coordinators. And I think a lot of that explains some of his struggles. Now, how much does it explain? That's the question. And you don't want to punish Jaden Daniels for coming from a good situation. C.J. Stroud came from a great situation. It was amazing in the NFL. But I think when you're comparing them head-to-head, you really have to heavily weight the context around them and what May was able to accomplish in spite of that context.
All right, I got one more quarterback for you, Bill, and it's a guy that was in a stupendous situation, J.J. McCarthy of the Michigan Wolverines that won the national championship. What's the best version of him at the NFL level?
It incorporates heavy doses of play action. Of course, you mentioned the situation was great. The running game was great. Maybe no surprise, he was a great play action passer at Michigan. Number one in the country in QBR over the last two seasons off of play action. We've seen so many young quarterbacks, whether it be Kirk Cousins earlier in his career, Baker Mayfield, when they get that heavy dose of play action in various kinds of offenses, it is just an easy button for them. It makes their life so much easier. They are so efficient with the play action that it makes up for some of those struggles elsewhere in the drop back passing game. So every team uses play action a little bit. I would encourage whoever drafts J.J. McCarthy to lean on it more than you would with most other quarterbacks.
Yeah, my answer is really similar in a way, which is I think J.J. McCarthy can achieve that kind of success if he lands in a Kyle Shanahan offense. Now, not all Kyle Shanahan offenses these days use a ton of play action necessarily, but I think Bill and I are thinking similarly about JJ's skill set and how it translates to the NFL or the proper scheme and circumstances around him. He is accurate. He is athletic. He's really good at throwing the ball over the middle of the field, setting up receivers to get yards after the catch. He plays quickly. Those are all things that Kyle Shanahan and his tree value in quarterbacks. And if he were to land in an offense like, I don't know, Minnesota, for example, that uses some of those principles, I think he would be situated to have the sort of success we're talking about.
Good stuff. We wanted to talk about best-case scenarios because the draft is an aspirational exercise, though teams do have different standards. The Bears, for example, have played 104 years and never had a quarterback throw for 4,000 yards or 30 touchdowns in a season. But you know what they say, the 105th time is the charm. When we come back on NFL Live, the Ravens re-signed a key piece of last year's defense, but Bill is going to tell us why he has big concerns for Baltimore on the other side of the ball. You won't want to miss that.
Hi, it's Mike Greenberg letting you know ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sportsbook of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me, plus many more. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today. New users get a bet reset up to $1,000 in bonus bets if your first bet doesn't win. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details. This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to JetsPizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be.
Here's the Week 2 UFL schedule. Tomorrow, the Brahmas square off against the Showboats at noon Eastern on ESPN, and at 8 on ABC, the Renegades take on the Battlehawks. Then Sunday, it's another matchup of unbeatens. The Stallions and Panthers kick off at noon Eastern on ESPN with the Roughnecks and DC Defenders at 4 on Fox. Those ESPN and ABC games can also be seen on ESPN+. The Baltimore Ravens have lost a lot of players this offseason, but here's one they managed to keep. Pass rusher Kyle Van Noy, who had 9 sacks in 12 games last year after joining the Ravens in late September, returning to the team on a 2-year contract. So that's a good get for Baltimore to keep him in the fold. And you see, Baltimore added Derrick Henry in free agency, made a couple of re-signings, but they did lose some key veterans in the trenches on the offensive line. And a Baltimore defense that led the NFL in takeaways, sacks, and scoring defense last year also lost contributors like Jadeveon Clowney, Patrick Queen, and Geno Stone. So all of that said, Mina Kimes, what is the biggest priority for the Baltimore Ravens in this year's draft?
It's the offensive line. The defense did lose some pretty key players, obviously keeping Matt Obike, who they would give an enormous contract we talked about earlier, was mammoth, and Kyle Van Noy returning is tremendous. He was really, really good for them last year. But offensively, to lose the starters, the number of starters that they did, Moses, Simpson, Zeitler, even though there are replacements in-house, you have Patrick McCarry, he's been a swing tackle for them, Daniel Falele, I still think that is such an area of need for them in the draft. And also, I think where they're picking, there'll be some interesting options available to them. I don't think they need to prioritize interior or offensive tackle, frankly, even with Ronnie Stanley back on a restructured deal and the tackles I mentioned, you still probably want to add depth there. But I think that position is so clearly their biggest need that I would be shocked if they went in another direction.
I agree. They're going to hit offensive line in the draft. They have to. But another place they might approach it is something the Ravens do maybe better than anybody else in football, and that's sign free agents after the draft. They love adding veterans over the summer. Yeah. Kyle Van Noy is a recent example. Jadeveon Clowney is an example. And the reason they do that is because they want to avoid triggering the NFL's compensatory pick formula. The Ravens are in line seemingly every single year to earn comp picks. This year is no exception. And if you wait until after June 1st, the players you sign do not count against the compensatory pick formula. So they have some holes up front, maybe want to add a veteran or two. Look at a player like Andrews Pete, who played left tackle for the Saints last year and could play tackle or guard. Or Mekhi Becton, who was a hot prospect for the Jets before injuries hit him. Maybe he's a development guy for them. Right now, those guys would cost the Ravens a compensatory pick. But if they wait until after June 1st, they're off scot-free. So don't be surprised if the Ravens add some players in the draft, but also bring in a veteran after June 1st.
And receiver Dan is still on the radar for Baltimore. They're looking around. They want a true X receiver for Lamar Jackson. He's never really had that. Somebody on the outside, big, who can win. So it could be an option for them in the first few rounds. They're also looking at some of those mid-tier free agency options.
This time last year, I believe they were signing Odell Beckham Jr., right? He's been released. He's still floating out there as a free agent. So actually, that gets me to my next topic. Odell Beckham Jr. and some other free agent wide receivers that are still floating out there. Maybe options for Baltimore.
Yeah, let's start with Odell. So Miami Dolphins are trying pretty hard to sign Odell Beckham. They made him, I'm told, at least one contract offer, possibly two. They've been in contact with him and his representatives. They're not quite there yet. There has not been that financial gulf bridge. So I'm told Beckham is willing to wait if he has to a little bit. He's done this in the past. Certainly wants to go to the right fit, but there is interest mutually in Miami. And I was told it doesn't count against their comp pick formula for the Dolphins because Odell, it was technically released from Baltimore. Right. So that helps Miami in this case. Tyler Boyd still out there, really good slot receiver. I'm told several teams have remained interested over the last month or so. But it's just a situation where he's probably going to wait until after the draft, be that May 2nd option for a team who doesn't fill their need in the draft over those first few days. So certainly Pittsburgh kid, grew up there. Steelers have a need. They haven't really made a hard offer of him yet. Maybe they'll do that.
Mina, what do you think about Tyler Boyd and his fit somewhere? Was there one more, Jeremy?
Oh, we still got.
Hang on, Mina. Jeremy had one more guy.
I'll add this real quick. Marquez Valdez-Scantling. Chargers, I'm told, have some interest. They're looking for like a speed receiver out there. Jacksonville, he lives in that area. They're looking for an extra piece. So he'll have some suitors. Could shake out in the next few weeks in a signing.
Now, Mina, I would love to know your thoughts on Tyler Boyd.
Yeah, very good player. I think it's really about a team where they need that role slot player. And the Steelers, Jeremy mentioned, make a ton of sense to me after trading Deontay Johnson. You still have George Pickens, who is your, you know, number one, wins outside, wins deep. But whether it's Russell Wilson or Justin Fields, whoever's quarterback is going to need an underneath answer. Boyd's so effective for Cincinnati against two high coverages, someone who can work over the middle of the field. Quarterback-friendly target, impressive catch radius at his size. So I think he's a really good player. And, yeah, there'd be a little bit of a revenge opportunity there, I guess, in Pittsburgh.
I wonder if his price continues to come down if a reunion in Cincinnati doesn't make sense for both sides, right? I mean, this is such a fun receiving core with Boyd, Higgins, and Ja'Marr Chase. I know they have Andre Yostavas, who I like. I know a lot of people like, who may get a bigger role this year. But I just feel like at some point, if you're going to make less money, why not stay in the place you've been your entire career with a great quarterback and a great offense? I think there has to be a point where maybe the price tag makes sense for Tyler Boyd to go back.
Yeah, it must be a tough time to be a free agent receiver right now, though, with all these receivers growing on trees in the draft. I think maybe after that's over, some of this will sort itself out a little bit more. We had kind of an odd thing we wanted to do here involving our friend Dan Orlovsky, who made some headlines earlier this week for a flatulence controversy. He apparently, this resulted in him getting a new sponsorship. Is this what I'm seeing here? Dude Wipes. So Orlovsky now driving around Connecticut in his Jeep with the passenger seat full of bags of Dude Wipes. And frankly, everybody, I'm just not sure where to go with that.
Is that a baby wipe? Is it the same thing?
It's a dude wipe.
A dude wipe.
And so I guess for a specific kind of baby.
Might be a little too spicy for Dan.
Might be. I don't know. There, a lot's going on there. Like, if you want to know more, then God help you. But you can look it up on the internet what happened with Orlovsky earlier this week. that resulted him getting wipes for apparently to carry around in his car. I have no idea why that happened. Anyway, we come back. Caitlin Clark has been an absolute monster in the women's college basketball tournament. Stay tuned to find out which NFL quarterbacks our analysts think have Caitlin Clark range on the gridiron.
I've always wanted to be in these moments and have confetti fall down on me.
It's a time of the year where there's more pressure than ever before.
This is what we do. National champs right here.
It takes a special player to be able to handle all that. Some can and some can't. Everybody's going to tune in to watch, see whether they can.
So many weapons for the Gamecocks. Look at the Wolfpack go.
This time, it's Iowa.
UConn back to the Final Four.
Yeah! I'm only promised 40 more minutes. Might as well go win it.
Oh, yes, the women's Final Four tips off in just over 2 hours in Cleveland. First game up, NC State trying to knock off unbeaten South Carolina. Then it's Caitlin Clark's Iowa Hawkeyes squaring off against UConn. Our pregame coverage starts at 6 Eastern on ESPN, just a little more than an hour from now. And we know who the Kansas City Chiefs are going to be rooting for. Earlier today, they tweeted out this photo of Caitlin in a Chiefs jersey saying, "All of Chiefs Kingdom is rooting for you tonight." And Chiefs quarterback Patrick Mahomes has some thoughts on Caitlin Clark. He was actually asked about her before the Super Bowl back in February. Take a listen.
Just a tremendous player, tremendous person from every time I've met with her and talked. You can tell she loves the game. She loves playing at Iowa, and it's going to be one of the best women's basketball, one of the best college basketball players to ever play, and then go to the WNBA and dominate there as well. Hopefully I never have to play her one-on-one because she'll for sure be getting buckets on me.
Yeah, an absolute phenomenon. Mina, what do you, in your opinion, what has Caitlin Clark meant for her sport?
I mean, just amplified a sport that was already on an incredible growth path, women's basketball, women's college basketball in this case, just so freaking entertaining. That's where actually I think that there's a valid Mahomes comparison, and I'm not saying she's the Patrick Mahomes of women's basketball, but they're both just so unbelievably entertaining that they're transformational in a way, and obviously both have that incredible ability to make plays from distance. I think where Mahomes bringing her up and talking about her leads my mind next to is when we talk about her as one of the all-time greats, a championship is required, right? Which is, of course, what Patrick Mahomes achieved. And those are amongst the stakes for tonight, for her to be held in that sort of lofty standard is if Iowa can win a championship.
Yeah, two more wins away from that. So we'll see how that goes for Caitlin Clark. But you mentioned you didn't want to do comparisons, but I got bad news for you. We're going to do them anyway. We wanted to talk about which NFL players were the best from long distance in honor of Caitlin Clark and her long distance three-pointer. So, Mina, you're up first. Who you got?
Well, I'm not talking about an NFL player. I'm talking about a prospect. My thought was kind of who's the Caitlin Clark of the draft, and it's actually not a quarterback. It's a receiver, Malik Nabers at LSU, who averaged over 17 yards a catch with a 70% catch rate, which is a very unusual combination of numbers. But similarly to Caitlin, he stretches the field in a way that completely changes the way his team is defended. He is a threat to explode every time he touches the ball.
Yeah, I'm going to go with C.J. Stroud, just a difference maker for the Texans. Transformed that team the way that Caitlin Clark is transforming college basketball. This 50-plus air yard completion, one of the longest of the year, four of more than 40 yards, ripped up the Browns defense in the postseason. Just a absolute baller. So C.J. Stroud, to me, is the guy.
I got Justin Herbert. Patrick Mahomes would be perfect as far as a creator, but if we're talking about those 30-foot rainbows that Caitlin Clark shoots for swishes off any platform or angle, that's Justin Herbert. He can throw at 60, 65 yards wherever he is on the field, off 1 foot, off 2 foot. Caitlin Clark's from Iowa. Justin Herbert's from Oregon. Those are two great states, the last I checked, so I like this comparison.
Yeah, I like that one, too. Herbert throws a pretty deep ball. I'm going with the guy who I think has the biggest arm in the league, and that is Josh Allen. throwing the deep ball. You see it here. My question, though, is, like, who's going to be on the other end of the deep ball for Josh Allen this year after the Stephon Diggs trade and Gabe Davis signing with Jacksonville in free agency? Mina, you had a thought on Khalil Shakir. Is that the guy you like for this answer?
Yeah, I mean, well, I like him as a deep ball target for Josh Allen. In fact, in the second half of the season, he actually ranked third in the NFL amongst all receivers in yards per reception, over 18 yards per catch for Shakir. And I'm not saying he's the number one receiver, and I don't think that should be his role in an offense. But, you know, we're talking about the Bills and their bare cupboard. I'm just saying it's not that bare. They do have talented players. They're still missing a number one, but Shakir, I think, really has upside as a number two and certainly as a deep threat.
That's the idea. When you lose guys, you should be able to replace them with guys that you have developed. We'll see if that works out for the Buffalo Bills. One more thing before we go here on NFL Live today. The men's Final Four is this weekend as well, and the big star in that has been NC State, 6'9", 275-pound DJ Burns. He's red hot right now, and he was recently asked about, because of his size, I guess, possibly an NFL future. Here's what he had to say.
Do you think maybe it's underestimating your basketball ability a little bit to make some money later after this?
Hey, underestimate all you want. You see what's happening.
So you have no interest in playing football?
Zero, yeah. Okay. I mean, yeah, zero.
I don't blame him. It does seem like it would hurt. Mina, should he reconsider?
No, yeah, I don't blame him either, given his talents as a basketball player and the relative lack of contact. I do think if he was to play in the NFL, he'd have to either gain or lose weight.
So. He does have the footwork, that's for sure. Hey, that's all the time we have on NFL Live. Have a good weekend. NFL Live will be back on Monday.